Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. How's it going today, Scott?
It is winter in Florida, and I'm depressed. It is overcast, and you know, it's like the Florida equivalent of snow. It was raining this morning.
Yeah, it's still raining here. We're going to escape to South Florida. Well, Orlando, Winter Haven. We're going to Legoland this afternoon.
Yeah, you're going to be an adult-like child or a child-like adult, or you are going to be adulting in the best way possible.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's kid's birthday, so we're going to head down there, spend tonight at the hotel and tomorrow in the park. So hopefully the weather down there is better than up here, although it looks like tomorrow, I think it's only supposed to be in the 50s, which, like you said, is freezing here in Florida.
Yeah, let's just focus on the important thing. It's for the kids, wink, wink.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting that part.
Let's get into today's topic. So we had a listener reach out and said, hey, it would be great to kind of start doing a little bit of an overview or introduction, getting started, something in that vein to Office 365. And we had all that material kind of ready to go since we had just delivered an 8-hour workshop on it and melted our brains and some other brains along the way. So we've got about, you know, 20 hours of content that we could go ahead and run through and figure this out. But we figured we'd start at the beginning and see what happens and see where we can kind of piecemeal in and redirect folks back to episodes we might have already done on things like licensing, identity, Skype Exchange, all that good stuff, right? Where it makes sense to hop in and get in there. So today we're going to do getting started with Office 365 and try and get through a little bit of just a really generic overview, right?
Exactly. And who knows, maybe they'll send up be a multiple parts, or we could like set a Guinness Book of World Record for the longest podcast ever. I don't know if there's one of those out there. Wonder if we could talk for 20 hours. I'm sure our listeners would love it.
It's been done before.
Since we have a whole bunch of content and only a little bit of time, where should we start with Office 365?
All right. So the first thing we have to do, because we're thinking about getting started, right, is whether you are an SMB, you're an enterprise, you know, in your case, a shop of one, doesn't matter if you have one or 100,000, you've got to start thinking about what type of plans and entitlements within those plans you're going to consume, right? So we all have to keep in the back of our mind that Office 365 is not something you install. It is a set of licensing and entitlements that we apply to users, typically for a suite of cloud services and occasionally for products or programs on devices, right? Windows 10, Mac, mobile devices, things like that. So being that, you know, Office 365 isn't something that we can install and we need to entitle everybody for, we need to think about kind of what those plans are and what's going on there. So to do that, we need to take a further step back and we've just got to kind of answer a little bit about what Office 365 is, right? So you're going to want to understand and really take some quality time to understand. I'll call them kind of what the different pillars or core offerings in Office 365 are. So by that, I mean things like SharePoint, Skype, Exchange, Yammer, and how all those are going to kind of come into play and what you're going to want to consume in there. Because when we talk about plans, typically we talk about SKU packs, right? So you'll hear me mention a lot E3s and E5s, these kind of enterprise plans, because friends don't let friends buy anything that's not an eSKU. And those are really just packages of these entitlements or individual licenses. So when we go out and buy an E3 or an E5, it comes with SharePoint, Skype, Exchange, Yammer, Teams, Forms, just all this stuff wrapped and rolled into one thing, right? But I can also buy those individually. Like I can just buy Exchange for a user or for a shared business process, or I can just buy Skype, or I can buy just SharePoint for, you know, my file collaboration, all those good kind of things. So everybody needs to go ahead and take a good look at that. Microsoft will typically put that in front of you as the SKU packs themselves and what those plans are. So business plans, enterprise, home plans, right, which we won't cover because that's kind of the consumer side of life. And then you've got the, I'll call them the special ones in there. So you have education SKUs specific to university, everything, right? Anything in the education space, grade school, college, uni, high school, like the whole thing ready to go. You have G SKUs for government. So government plans, you know, hosted in different tenancies, GovCloud, things like that. And then you also have nonprofits or NFP SKUs as well. So it can get really weird, really hairy, just kind of all over the place. We talked a lot about licensing in episode 5 and episode 6. So we'll give links in the show notes back so everybody has that for kind of a deeper dive. But just at a high level, you know, when you're thinking about where to start with some of these plans, so you've walked in and you've said, I really like business features. You know, you might want to understand limits to the number of users you have, kind of what's going on in there. Do you want to talk about some of that? Kind of like, you know, choose a plan and just where do you start with some of those constraints?
Kind of like we said, we talked about some of these in, I think episode 5 was the one where we dove into a bunch of those SKU packs, but getting started with them, some of those constraints do get into, again, how many users you have, what you're actually looking to do. So I know you said friends don't let friends buy business. I don't buy business. I'm a user of one. I still use enterprise. But business plans cap out about 300 users. So if you're a company of over 300 users, just forget about business plans, go straight to enterprise. You start getting into enterprise and it really is what you want. You have E1, E3, E5. E1 is going to be kind of those basic online services and a smaller set of SharePoint. So it gets, like you said, it gets hairy. You dive into SharePoint has plan 1 and plan 2. Exchange has plan 1 and plan 2. Skype for Business has plan 1 and plan 2. E1 comes with the plan 1 of a lot of those. E3 comes with plan 2 of a lot of those and then throws on all the desktop licensing for Office 2016. And E5 throws in a bunch of like really enterprisey features as well as a lot of the voice features if you're looking to do voice and Skype for Business. So those are kind of the big, I would say some of the big differentiators between some of those. Most of them, you can turn an E1 into an E3 by buying add-on services. You can turn an E3 into an E5 by buying add-on services. That is typically not the best way to save money. If you need one or maybe two of the upgraded features, you might as well just buy the next plan because you're going to save money in the long run. And then, again, you get into the nonprofits, the government, the education. Education is its own animal. We should get somebody on here to talk about the education plans.
I think education, gov, nonprofit, they're all different enough that they're probably worth about having someone who's got a little bit more expertise than kind of the e-SKUs or what I'll call kind of, you know, the commercial side of the house that we would have.
Nonprofits and government are, well, government's lagging somewhat in features because it's government. Government's always lagging behind, right? I didn't say that. This is not a government podcast. But the not-for-profits is really a bundle of a few of those enterprise and business plans. Same plans, just different pricing. So again, you can hear a lot more details in some of that in some of our earlier episodes. But once you pick kind of what you want, business, enterprise, E1, 3, 5, any of those, there's still some other things you kind of want to think about if you're going to consider rolling out Office 365. Especially the big one that I like to talk about that really can play a big impact is some of the network bandwidth requirements. So this is something we talked about. I don't think we've talked about this particular area much on the podcast yet, but you've got to think that when you hosted everything on-prem, all that network traffic was bouncing around on your internal network. It was all going to local servers. It was going through all your gigabit switches on-prem, internal communication, chat over Skype for Business, grabbing files off your SharePoint environment. It was all coming over your local network that you have, I mean, you have control over, but you're also going to have a lot greater bandwidth there. Now you start rolling out Office 365. And if you're rolling out hundreds or thousands of users, you're rolling out all the entitlements, you're rolling out Skype for Business, Exchange, SharePoint. People are uploading and downloading files. They're having voice and video conversations over Skype. every single email that they're sending or receiving, even internal among themselves, is going up to Exchange Online, back down to Exchange On-Prem. That amount of traffic that goes out over your public internet connection, it increases significantly, especially based on how many users you have, how many computers you have, firewalls, proxy servers, all of those devices and those aspects of public internet access come into play in bandwidth. So you may need to look at, hey, do I even have enough bandwidth? Do I have to upgrade my internet bandwidth to account for the increase in internet traffic that going to Office 365 is going to incur? So there's some bandwidth calculators out there. There's a bunch of resources from Microsoft to help you even plan for that of, hey, what is that estimated bandwidth going to be? We can link to some of those calculators. Again, this could probably be a whole episode just in and of itself around network planning, but that's one of the first things to think about. Once you have all that down, you can go start thinking about rolling this out or signing up for a tenant. So that's kind of the next step is once you've thought about all of these, how do you actually get started with a brand new Office 365 environment?
I'm just going to kind of take a step back there too. So I think one of the things that's important is when you purchase all of these things, say you get one of those eSKUs, right? I get an E3 or an E5. That doesn't mean that you're going to consume everything that's within it, right? There might have been a value there in bundling that together and getting a lower price on it, but that doesn't mean you as a customer, you're going to consume everything. So Microsoft has this thing out there called the service description, right? Office 365 service description. So you can go to office365sd.com and that'll redirect you over to the service description. And what that does is it will break everything down across these various SKUs. So I can go into something, I can say, you know, what is the difference in SharePoint Online on a feature by feature basis for an E1, an E3, an E5, and an F1, right? And you can kind of go through and you'll have to do a little bit of work to kind of tick those things off and say, where am I going to be consuming things, so that you can start to go ahead and think about some of those network calculations and things you might need to plug into calculators at the end of the day, right? So for calculators, everybody can go to aka.ms/tune, and that takes you over to the network planning and performance tuning article for Office 365, and that walks you through all the various calculators and things like that. But really onboarding into Office 365, it is a big upfront planning exercise if you want to do it, quote unquote, the right way, right? You're going to spend a lot of time in traditional constructs like plan the work, work the plan, and you've really got to plan it out to be successful, particularly in enterprise scenarios, right? I think where you do have multiple offices and, you know, your WAN has a certain construct to it, and maybe you're worried about MPLS and other things going across there, right? It can kind of be all over the place. So there are resources out there, but you don't know about them because nobody is really pointing you there, right? If I'm just going, like you said, and I'm going and signing up for that plan, there's nothing in that thing that calls out and says, oh, go to the service description here. Oh, go and look at network performance and tuning over here and see what's it's on you as a consumer really to figure some of that stuff out, because those are the technical kind of heady bits that are sitting up in front of you.
And like you said, I forgot to mention those service descriptions and helping pick a plan, but those are super useful when you're trying to narrow it down to that fine grain level of what exactly am I getting with each of those SKUs. So signing up for a tenant. Again, you've thought about all of this. You want to sign up for a tenant? Super easy. Go to office.com. I know, hard URL to remember, right? Looking for Office 365, go to office.com. And up at the top, you'll see products. You can click on products, see the education, and then business. They kind of break them out in those two separate ones. There's a home tab. There's some applications around the individual products. But for our purpose, let's say you're signing up for your business. You want to get an enterprise, a business plan. Just click on products. Underneath the for business heading, you can click on plans and pricing. And that will take you right to the business ones that we said, don't buy, go get enterprise. If you are going to get business, again, if you're small, I do know people that use business, they have business. You can see the breakdown of the business plans, the pricing for them there. Once you click on the for enterprise at the left side, on the left side there, you'll see all those enterprise plans, the Pro Plus, E1, E3, E5. right from that page, you can... They moved the trial links on me.
They're going to move it. I mean, this makes for compelling stuff, right?
Right.
So ultimately, you've got to find your way to get in and select that trial, whatever it's going to be, right? So you've made a decision about a plan, and you've said, you know, I'm going to do that E1, E3, E5, because really the other stuff doesn't exist. We'll keep hammering that home. And you're going to land in effectively a wizard that's going to walk you through a couple things, right? It's going to ask you for an email address, and that could be any email address. It could be your outlook.com, could be your company email address, could be Gmail, right? Doesn't matter. I need an email address. And then it's going to ask you to choose a domain name for your tenancy. So this is super important because the name you choose here, you are locked into and you're not changing it. Like there's no update my domain name later. There's buy a whole new tenant and migrate all your crap, right? So it's super important that everybody recognizes. I can't tell you the number of tenants I've seen that just have random gibberish characters, or they were named after like Star Wars characters or Disney characters because whoever signed up for it, they thought it was like a server. So they followed their internal naming convention and boom, it was stood up. But your users are going to see this all over the place. So you're going to be presented with a form and it's going to say, put in your thing, and it's going to have this dot on Microsoft.com after it. So you're going to say, well, you know, I'm Contoso, so I would like Contoso.onMicrosoft.com. If someone else in the world has already consumed that tenant name, you can't get it. Doesn't exist. It's not there. It's gone. You can't have it, right? So you're going to have to pick something else. So be prepared for that as well. Like your company identity might have been consumed by another person who was there before you. And until they leave as a customer and they're gone for a certain amount of time, that domain is never coming back, right? You can effectively consider it gone. So you're going to have to pick that name. That name manifests not just for the initial name of your users. We'll kind of talk about how to change that probably in like 12 episodes from now, but it also impacts what things like their URL to access SharePoint are going to be, right? So that's typically tenantname.sharepoint.com. Well, if you had abc1234.onmicrosoft.com and your company name's really Contoso, your users are never going to see the company name, right? All they're ever going to see is ABC1234. So you want to think about kind of downstream impacts to user experience and everything there, because it can be a little bit off.
Yeah, I just checked. ASDF and QWERTY are both gone. So there's somebody out there that did that. They just went in, they hit ASDF. Don't do that. Think about the name.
Really, think about it. Like, you only get it once. Can't stress this enough. Like, it is there. It is a one-time thing. And once it's up, it is done. You can put vanity stuff in front of it and do redirects and things, but users will see this name multiple times throughout the day as they interact with services, whether it is SharePoint, whether it is their OneDrive, whether it is even like going to Owa to check their mailbox, right? They're always going to see that realm and all those kinds of things sitting there. So super duper important.
Yep. Probably the most important thing. I'm trying to think of if there's anything else in the whole Office 365 environment that you see so frequently or use so much that you cannot change once you pick it. And I think this is the only thing that comes to mind.
It's definitely up there. So now that we've scared you about picking a name and you've made sure that you've picked the right one, so you've got your email address, you've got your name, you'll enter some kind of provisional information like how many users do you really think you're going to have in this tenant? Are you going to have one? Are you going to have 10? Doesn't really matter what you say. The only impact is you're going to get a call from somebody in Fargo, North Dakota in about 2 weeks after you sign up. And they're going to say, how's your trial going? Oh, we see you said you were going to have 1,000 users, but you've only got one. And your tenant name was blah, 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 demo. Well, yeah, because I was doing a demo, right? Or whatever it happened to be. So, you know, prepare yourself for that. You are going to have to verify that you're a real person. So there is a step in that process where you're going to be asked to put in a mobile phone number. That can't be like a fake number. It has to be coming from a real carrier. So things like if you use like Google Voice or use Grand Central back in the day, or you've got some kind of like virtualized cell phone thing going on, you're going to have to give your real number out here so that you can be verified and they can say like, okay, I've sent you that SMS code and you're good to go. And that's really about it. It's that easy, right? You go ahead and hit next, and you're going to actually be signed straight into your tenant as that initial first global administrator, right? So now I'm in as a deity because I'm the person who created that. And you're going to be sitting at the office.com homepage, but signed in this time. And you're going to see all your tiles and things. And they're going to be just kind of sitting there spinning, saying, setting up this service, setting up that service. Because in the background, Microsoft's going out now and they're kind of creating your slice of the pie for an exchange tenancy and standing up that infrastructure, you know, if it was needed for you. They're standing up that Skype infrastructure, the SharePoint infrastructure, all those different kinds of things, right? So that can take anything from 5 minutes, depending on what it is, 15, 20, sometimes a couple hours, depending on what's going on in the day, before you're actually going to be able to go ahead and start really getting like users in there. And but there's a bunch of other setup you can do like while you're waiting for that to happen.
Exactly. So one of those other setups that you really should do right away, if you're gonna planning on roll this out, if you're just trialing it, you could probably skip this, but adding that custom domain. So again, like we said, you're gonna pick a name. It's gonna be whatever name you pick, .onmicrosoft.com. That'll be your email address. That'll be your login name. That will be your primary, at this point in time, your primary domain for Office 365. If you want it to be something like contoso.com, intellijink.com, yourcompany.com, at this point in time, go in and get that custom domain added to your Office 365 tenant. That way, as you start creating users, if you're going to set up some of the AD Connect to sync from Azure AD, which we talked about in episode 13, we'll hit on it a little bit here in a second, you have that domain in there. So this is as easy as just going into the admin portal. It's under setup, I believe, add a domain, and you'll just type in your domain, contoso.com. It'll walk you through a wizard to actually verify that you own that domain. Again, they don't want you adding some domain that you don't own, that you can't modify DNS for, any of that. So you can confirm it a few different ways. If you're on GoDaddy, you can just sign into GoDaddy. It'll confirm you own it in GoDaddy by logging you in. If you're not on GoDaddy, you can use some DNS records, a text records, an MX record. You can verify it that way. And recently, it was in one of our news episodes, they added the ability to verify with an email address. So you type in your email address at that domain, it sends you an email. You can verify that, yes, I own this domain, it's mine. Again, that can be really nice if maybe your network team owns DNS and you're like, oh, now I got to go to the network guys, get them to update DNS, wait for that to propagate. This email feature is nice. So once you do all that, verify you own it, that domain is added to your tenant and you can start using it for things like email aliases for your UPN, your username, all of that type of stuff. So that domain's there, you can use it. Again, do this right away. It saves you the trouble of going back and changing a bunch of users later, because once that domain's added, you can set it to the default, and anything you new you do around emails, usernames, SIP addresses, all of those will then get that default domain instead of that on Microsoft.com domain.
You mentioned the GoDaddy thing there. So Microsoft does have that functionality now where they can log into certain registrars and register and configure those records for you. So your MX records, kind of all your SIP records, CNAMEs, all that stuff. I don't know how you feel about that personally. Like, I tend to tell most folks, like, no matter what, like, even if you are registered in GoDaddy, go ahead and register all those things yourself, if anything, just to make sure you understand what's going on in the process, right?
Yep.
There might be like 4 MX records that you have to put in, and it's great that Microsoft can do it automatically for you. But when you're going ahead and registering them, you're going to have some light bulbs going off in your head, right? So what is this protection.outlook.com thing that it's going through? Oh, that's where they're doing auto discover for Exchange. Oh, so now when I'm doing that federation, I'm a TLS here, and I've got this one over here, and the time to live, things like that, just so you can understand all those impacts, because at some point, you know, it might change or you might go, hey, my mail flow changes. So it's important to recognize how it's running through Office 365 and all those kinds of things.
And if you're doing a migration too, the other one is migration. So this is one you don't want to do, is you're doing a migration. All of a sudden you say, hey, GoDaddy, go update my MX records. And before you know it, all your emails running to Office 365 and you weren't ready for it. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm with you. Don't let GoDaddy, or don't do it automatically, do it all yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Be measured in kind of what you go in and what you have going on there. So you mentioned that we already talked about identity. We talked a bunch about kind of the different identity models and cloud identity and synchronized identity, federated identity. So that was all episode 13. We'll make sure we put a link to that in the show notes as well. But I think that's kind of like the next place you'll go is deciding now you've got that domain, your users can show up in a more meaningful way. Because remember, we're doing Office 365, and Office 365 isn't about the service. It's about users and individual entitlements, right? So now that we've got our back end ready to go, now we can start thinking about how users are going to get in there and access that environment. So we're going to have a think about how they authenticate, how they get added in, all that kind of stuff. If you're just cloud-only users, you know, you can hop over in the admin center at that point. You can start adding users, adding groups, and putting in that basic metadata about people, right? First name, last name, telephone, address, things like that. And you're kind of off to the races and running, right?
I talked about the name, the one thing you want to think about that you can't change. This is probably the second biggest one. I know you've had conversations with clients about this. It came up in one of the sessions we did, it may have even been last year, where a user is like, hey, I signed up for Office 365. I created, I don't know, 1,000 users that are cloud-only users. Everybody's using it. It's great. We have AD on-prem, and now we want to sync our AD on-prem to our Office 365 and merge our 1,000 users on-prem that are in our AD with our 1,000 users that are cloud-only. And just have that magically all connect together 6, 8, 9 months later after we've been using it. What's the story there? Is this something you should think about before you create those 1,000 users as cloud-only users?
I would highly recommend it. So, I mean, there can be directory synchronization as its own beast, right? And how you maintain consistency and how that matching occurs. So how do I know that a user on-prem already exists in the cloud? So when Scott's attribute on-premises changes, that it right updates the right Scott or the right Ben on the cloud side, right? So there's a bunch of things going on with, you know, source anchors and consistency GUIDs. And then there's UPN soft matching, and there might be like proxy address matching going on. There's kind of a whole rule set to synchronization and things like that. So, you know, again, I would encourage people to go back and listen to episode 13. And if we didn't cover something in there, let us know. And we can certainly cover it on this side. I think we're at about time for this one, right? So we've come up, we've covered SKUs and licensing, service description, a little bit about network tuning, performance, how to actually onboard and create a tenant. Now we're ready to go. So maybe we can cut it off here and do another one in the future, kind of picking up with administration, right? And some of those other bells, whistles, knobs, things we'll want to tweak and tune while, you know, users might be synchronizing in or, you know, one of your other admins creating those people, doing those kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. If you're listening to this, you don't want to wait for some of those. We did really quick have a couple episodes where we did cover some of the getting started around products. Episode 20, we talked about getting started with Skype for Business. Episode 22, we talked about getting started with Exchange. And episode 9, we talked a little bit about SharePoint administration. So we can dive into maybe some of those a little bit more again. But again, if you're listening to this, you want to quick jump back and listen to those to catch on some of the getting started with those specific products. Those are some episodes you can listen to. So again, with that, thanks a lot, Scott. Another good episode, and we'll talk to you next week.
Perfect. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.